Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm very excited. Episode 85 of CJ Evolution. I got Terrence Herrick in the house. Terrence is a fellow podcaster, and I've listened to his podcast. If you haven't listened to it, you got to go over. It's a Police Academy podcast. A great show. Terrence, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Patrick. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, anytime, man. I appreciate you coming on, and I'm so glad you agreed to come on because, and you would probably agree, Terrence, there's not a lot of cops that are doing what we're doing out there.
No. And that's, you know, that's why I decided to do mine originally. The idea came about, mine launched this last April of 16, but the idea really started in the fall of 15. And at that time, there really was almost nothing for police podcasts. And the only things that were up were cop shows strictly for cops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's in the midst of Ferguson and just Black Lives Matter and the media really pushing a narrative that, as any police officer knows, isn't accurate. So I really felt like there was a need for civilians, especially, to have access to a police officer, in my case, former police officer, someone who understands the culture, the mindset, the training, why cops do what they do, not to justify any particular incident or actions by the police. I'll be the first one to condemn and talk negatively about an officer or a department that are doing things wrong. And that's kind of the point. We have to have that conversation. Sure. And if people don't see that someone's being honest about our dirty laundry as law enforcement, in the law enforcement community, then they're not going to believe anything you say when you're, for example, defending an officer who you take Darren Wilson and Ferguson. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll defend him until we have new evidence that proves that everything we know about the case is wrong. He was completely justified, and I'll stand by that all day long. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's not a lot out there. So of course I'd come on your show. It was great to hear from you, and I actually hadn't seen your show yet. So listened to a couple episodes and find it really interesting.
Well, thank you, man. And can you tell the people a little bit about your personal story? I mean, what drove you to law enforcement? You know, and I mean, you don't have to say where you work if you don't want to. But what drove you to law enforcement? And you know, what pulled you out of law enforcement?
Yeah. So I was in college, actually majoring in dietetics. So I was going to sit in an office and create meal plans for various sorts of people that wouldn't follow them. And, you know, I got into nutrition in college and, you know, worked out a lot, ate really well, whatever. So I kind of pursued that path a little bit. And through a mutual coworker, you know, where I worked during the summers at college, you know, his brother was a police officer and, you know, would tell me stories. And so I started kind of pondering that idea, and didn't take very long for me to figure out that it'd be a lot more fun to be out in a cruiser, you know, at that time, at that age, chasing bad guys, right? That's what you think it's going to be. And that's kind of where it started. So I switched majors and decided to go to CJ and psych and graduated. Had a job right out of college, and I have no problem saying where I worked. I was with the Bellevue, Nebraska Police Department. Mm-hmm. It's the third largest city in Nebraska. We're directly south of Omaha. We're connected to Omaha. Okay. So I did that for 5 years, just a little bit over 5 years, and loved it. Worked the road the whole time. I was on nights and days here and there, and I still love police work. And the door isn't shut for me going back to it. The reason I left is that I had an offer to get into private business and ultimately take over a company And my wife and I had to weigh the pros and cons of a future in the private business world and in law enforcement. And it sounds like you're in admin now. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm part of the administration in my department, yes.
Okay, so I'm sure you can attest to this. If you, as a human being, are on patrol as a police officer in any urban area, especially where you have a lot of crime, high call levels, et cetera, if you do that for 20, 30 years, does anyone walk out with their soul?
Mm-hmm.
Not very many people do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other option is to transition out of patrol, which is what I really love. I loved to, and still do love, the interaction between or with civilians and, you know, your community and helping people. That's why I became a police officer, is to help people.
Mm-hmm.
But you see a lot of really terrible things, and you see the worst of humanity as well. And you do that long enough, and you lose sight. Most guys lose sight of why they became police officers in the first place. And so your option is stay on the road and lose a very large part of your soul. That's the way I put it, at least. And, or, go into admin, go into, you know, supervisor, lieutenant, except, you know, move up through the ranks and kind of separate yourself a little bit from that toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking at that, aside from all the other stuff, I won't get into, you know, the business stuff, but the negatives of those options for me in law enforcement were a big part of that decision, because I love the road. But I knew I couldn't stay there without it being a detriment to my health and my family's for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And the ceiling, as far as moving up through the ranks, for me, felt really low. I would have loved being a sergeant and having a crew of officers to supervise. I would have loved that role. Anything above that, I think I would have hated, because it's all admin. You know, you're in a uniform at a desk most of the time. It becomes more political,
yeah,
and less police work. So that's kind of why I got out, if that answers your question.
It does. And, you know, and it really, what you said kind of rings true. And, you know, for me too, because I was that guy. I was on the street for many years, getting burned out, getting frustrated, getting cynical. And for me, I had an opportunity to kind of change views, you know, and get into an admin role. And now I help with like the training and recruitment of the department. Mm-hmm. And really, it's a nice scenery, you know, because like you make a great point, Terrence. I mean, the road and the street, you know, can just wreak havoc on your, you know, not only physical well-being, but your emotional well-being too. And so it was an opportunity that I took, because I was going to retire. And, mm-hmm, you know, I decided to stay on a little longer and kind of, you know, get a different view and help with the building of a department, you know, and help with, you know, the recruitment, you know, and getting the right people on board, you know, to take over when I'm gone. And
right,
the other thing that really kind of rings true, and kind of you made a really good point, was, you know, leaving for business reasons too. Look, I mean, I've talked about on my show many times, the reality is everybody's going to retire. You know, everybody's going to leave their profession sooner or later. And the fact of the matter is, we're living longer, and, you know, very few people I know, and you probably know some of the, you know, the people too, that they retire, they get out of law enforcement, and they're on to something else. They're either starting a business or a security business or doing consulting or, you know, being an accident investigator. So I think it's great, you know, that you followed your dream, you know, and you're getting out and you did something, and it's business related, because like I said, we're all going to do something else, most of us, you know, after law enforcement. So I'm very entrepreneurial. You know, I have, you know, graduate degree in business. So I hear you. And I believe in, you know, being versatile, you know, and,
yeah,
and being able to do different things. And yeah, I think it's great, man. You got that experience. You were on the road, you did your time, and now you're on to bigger and better things. But like you said, the door is still open if you wanted to get in back. So that's cool.
Yeah. And we're very like-minded in that sense of, I'm very entrepreneurial minded. I just I'm always looking to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what police officers really do. That's what we do all the time. I say mm-hmm. we, but, you know, we solve problems. Yeah. And I was just reading some of your information on your website, and I felt like I was reading about me. We're very similar in that way. Mm-hmm. You let me sit still for too long and I'm gone because I'm going to get bored. You need
exactly.
I have to be challenged. I need a challenge. So,
well, the one thing I like about the mission that you have on your website is to lessen the divide between the police and, you know, the confused and misinformed society by having a conversation mm-hmm. no one is having. That really hits a chord. And I think it's exactly right. You know, when you say traditional media outlets driven by ratings and special interest have long, and I'm, you know, citing your website, have long strayed from their true calling to, you know, bring the truth to the masses. And that's what the one thing I like about your show is that you're informing people about what really happens in law enforcement. And yeah, it's controversial, you know, I mean, but like I said, you're getting the message out, which I think is pretty cool. So it's kind of, because a lot of that stuff, and you mentioned like Ferguson and some other high profile cases, I mean, immediately we were being told, not just us in law enforcement, but everybody in the country were being told one narrative, and it turned out to be mm-hmm. completely opposite when the chips, when all the evidence came in.
Right. Yeah. And, gosh, I totally lost, what I was going to say there.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. I can't remember what I was going to say.
Well, no, you know, just about the narrative now. And I think, you know, hopefully, you know, as we go forward, you know, it's going to change, you know, the perception of law enforcement, because I think, you know, obviously a lot was done, a lot of damage was done. And let's be honest, the one thing I like about your show, Terrence, you even said it, look, if officers are out there screwing up and making mistakes, I'll be the first one like you to say, look, that officer screwed up. Just because we're, you know, we were part of, a group, which is law enforcement, and we protect our own, doesn't mean that we, at least in my department, I'm sure it was the same in your department, that, you know, we're covering up for crooked and bad cops. You know, if cops mm-hmm. are out there doing bad things, and there is a level of corruption out there, and there are bad cops, but if they're out there doing bad things, they got to be held accountable. But I always tell people, and I tell, you know, young officers, I tell people in the academy, the overwhelming majority of people out there in law enforcement, at least in my opinion, are good people. They have families. They're doing a very difficult job. It's that very, very small percentage of people out there that are bad cops.
Yeah, absolutely. And you reminded me what I was going to say. I started my podcast with a series on Ferguson, mm-hmm. which, you know, to especially someone who is anti-police would seem like I'm just defending a police officer who killed an unarmed black Michael Brown. Mm-hmm. I've also done a series on Chicago police more recently. And that is very critical of the Chicago Police Department. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to the point you just made, even in a department like Chicago, which is really struggling in the most important areas, accountability, funding, training, they're really struggling. Most of the officers there are good people trying to do their best. Mm-hmm. They're in an environment that doesn't really allow them to reach that potential, but they're still good people. They got into it for the right reasons. And, you know, the best we can do is hold those departments accountable and provide them with what they need. And mm-hmm. Chicago hasn't done that. And just as a case in point, Chicago's, they just haven't supported their police department and they haven't held them accountable. And that's a bad recipe when you're talking about a department that big. Mm-hmm. It's you're going to breed issues that, you know, we're now seeing. And I mean, Chicago's got a long history of this. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about both sides of it because it's all important. We can't have the conversation if all we're going to do is defend every action on the part of law enforcement. And, you know, to the other side, we can't just criticize everything that cops do, everything that looks bad without all the information, because most of the time there is a legitimate reason for what you're seeing, even if it's not right in front of you.
Exactly. And yeah, we talked about this. I had one of the deputy commissioners of NYPD. Her name is Tracy Kesey. She's in charge of training, you know, and she was on the show a couple of weeks ago. We talked about this where, you know, in a department the size of NYPD, you're talking like 45,000, 50 cops. And yeah, I mean, you can't always defend. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that do. I mean, everything the police do, you know, I'm sure there's people as well. They're the cops, you know, and they're, no, it doesn't work that way. You know, cops screw up. They make mistakes. They make bad judgment calls. But like you said, I mean, we have to look at it from both sides. And the flip side of that is, I think we need to do a better job in law enforcement all around the country, my department included, of educating the public on why we do the things we do sometimes. Most people get what they know about law enforcement, you know this, off television shows and the movies. That's it. That's their extent of law enforcement knowledge. Right. You know, the whole issue of, you know, why did that officer, just kind of a, you know, general example, why did that officer shoot that guy with a knife when the guy had a knife and the cop had a gun? And I've had these cases when, you know, where people say, well, it's not fair, the cop had a gun. And well, it's education. Yeah, you have to educate people that a knife is a weapon. You know, and so I think, you know, after and you hit it, you know, after Michael Brown and who's that other guy up in New York who got choked out by the cops? I mean, I think now is more than ever we need to try to connect and try to rebuild that trust with the community. We don't just shrink back into our cars. We have to engage, really engage in more community policing. And we're not going to win everybody over. I know that. You know that.
Right.
We just need to do a better job.
Yeah. When I first told my dad that I was switching to criminal justice, he goes, why don't you be a firefighter? And he knew that there's no way I was going to go be a firefighter. But he was right in the sense that firefighters really have it made. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves firefighters, and they always will. They're you know, the hero that rides in on a white horse and saves the day, a red horse in their case. But the police, no matter how, like you said, no matter how well we do at community policing and reaching out and really educating people, showing them that we are human beings as well, are always going to be fighting that uphill battle because no one likes to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever it is that you kind of set your wings and leave the nest, you are now an autonomous, you have sovereignty, you're free in America, right? If you choose. And we value that. We value that freedom and that ability to do as we please here in this country. And that's really important. At the same time, when a police officer pulls you over, that is suddenly and violently just ripped away from you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't slow down and think about it. Why, when I get pulled over, even when I was an active police officer and now, I'm probably not going to get a ticket. Let's be honest. I'm probably not. Mm-hmm. But my heart rate triples the second those red and blue stripes.
Oh, yeah. Me too. It's just psychological. And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you just been caught. Just like when you were a kid and you got – and it's – for me, I'm very I'm not – I wasn't a by-the-book police officer. I used a lot of discretion and really looked at the situation. But I hate getting in trouble, and I think most people do. So you leave the nest, you no longer have a parent telling you what to do or teachers saying you've got to do this or that or the other. You're your own person. Mm-hmm. And then a police officer comes by and pulls you over for whatever it is or comes to your house for an issue. And the second they arrive, you are no longer free. And
that's huge.
That's really hard for people to deal with. And I understand because it is for me too. Mm-hmm. It's a very terrible feeling to know that whatever that person says is going to happen, whether I like it or not. And you know, they might listen to my appeals, you know, to take a different action, but they might not. And a lot of people have experienced that where the police show up and they, you know, the thing, everything doesn't go the way that that civilian, that citizen doesn't, or everything doesn't go the way that that citizen wants it to. Mm-hmm. And it's a helpless feeling. So we're always going to be fighting that uphill battle. People are always going to hate cops. To what extent and why, I think, it will be largely determined by how well we do at community policing mm-hmm. in the future.
And I still think, I mean, this is just my opinion. I mean, I still think that there is, I think there's a large majority, and maybe I'm just naive, but I think the majority of people out there do support law enforcement. I think it's the various, you know, groups out there, some of whom we named, that are the most vocal, and they, you know, they've dominated the media in the last couple of years, and I don't think that's representative of the, you know, of the majority. I think it's just a few groups out there, you know, screaming and hollering, and again, and sometimes that, you know, they have that, they're justified because officers have made, you know, stupid mistake. That one, you know, I think about that one cop you down in South Carolina shoots that guy in the back, you know, right. Plugs him like 8 times. Okay, I get it. Yeah. But, you know, I do think that they're, you know, again, my opinion, I think the majority of people out there support, you know, law enforcement. They're just, you know, it's just a different time, you know, it's a yeah. heck of a different time when I got into it 21 years ago. And, you know, it's just a different way. I think it's a lot harder to police these days, and I can see how, you know, why a lot of people are getting out of it. You know, it's just a tough mm-hmm. business to be in, and I think a lot of that has to do with the climate, and, you know, people are, you know, just afraid of getting into law enforcement. They don't want to be on the news if they, you know, make some mistake or something like that. I mean, the one thing I don't know what your thoughts on this, Terrence, is, you know, the one thing that had helped me a lot was, even when I was on the street, is I meditate, you know, in the mornings. mm-hmm. And that really kind of helped me. I mean, there's a lot of meditation. I use a meditation app, and I talked about this on my show sometimes, where you just have to have that. You have to have a balance, man. You have to, right. you know, and you probably saw this too. You know, you're working a shift. You come home, you know, you're pissed off. You're in a bad mood, whatever. And that kind of dominates your whole rest of your day. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know I speak from experience because I've done that many, many times. But it benefited me, and maybe I'm just getting older, and that's a fact, I'm getting older. But I learned a while ago, you know, a couple years back, was, you know, I've got to start surrounding myself with people who aren't in law enforcement. Not that I don't love law enforcement, but I have to start surrounding myself with people who have no affiliation in law enforcement and surrounding myself with more positive people. You know, yeah. No, I'm serious. I mean,
I laugh because by default, if you're surrounding yourself from people that aren't in law enforcement, they're more positive.
People. Well, exactly. Well, I'm not saying now I'll be fair to people out there in law enforcement. I'm not saying that everybody in law enforcement is negative. I'm just saying that it really opened my eyes because you know how it is, man. I mean, you know this, you're conditioned in the mm-hmm. academy. You're conditioned throughout your career that if you don't have a badge, you're the enemy. I mean, I can't trust you. Right. And it took, at least for me, many, many years to kind of realize that not everybody out there is a criminal. And in mm-hmm. fact, the majority of people are decent people. They just have jobs. I mean, yeah, there is a criminal element. We all know that. But the majority of people are good people. And, you know, it took me a while to realize that. And the reason that I started to realize that is the people I surround myself with. Mm-hmm. You know, if I surround myself with negativity, guess what? I'm going to get negativity. If I surround myself right. with positivity and put positive in, I'm probably going to get that.
Huh. That's interesting. I always kind of kept myself surrounded by civilians. Mm-hmm. I have some really good friends, a decent-sized group of really good friends that are not in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I've been friends with for a long time, and I kept those people around.
Wow. After you became a cop?
Yep.
And well, I'm not saying you didn't, but usually people, like when I became a cop, you know, I lost some of the friends I used to have just because of the very point that I was a cop.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. No, I didn't have that issue. You know, I don't know. I had friends on the department, but it wasn't like when I was when I was off work, I was off work. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to, and maybe this is why my experience was different. I wasn't kind of the, what you would consider the typical cop where everything about my life is cop. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't have anything, any stickers on my car. I didn't go do all my extracurriculars weren't with other officers.
Oh, okay.
My life remained pretty civilian outside of work. I tried to leave work at work. I didn't meditate at the time. That's a good point, though. I do meditate now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly because of Tim Ferriss. He has a podcast.
New book. Have you seen his new book? You got to get that book, dude.
Tools of Titans.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't gotten it yet.
I got it on my desk right here, and it's like a Bible, but I've read some of it, but I haven't got a chance to. Sorry to digress.
No. I will probably read that book once I get around to it. But yeah, Tim Ferriss, all the interviews that he does, 95% of those guys who are all, obviously, that's the whole point of the show, they're the 1% of whatever field they're in, meditate.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, it's one of the constants in really successful people. And I don't know, do you use Calm or Headspace?
I use Headspace. And, you know, okay. I've talked about it before. And no, I'm not a spokesman. But no, it's really cool, dude. I mean, you download the app. It doesn't matter if you have an iOS or an Android. And you download the app and the first 10 episodes are free. But then, you know, you start paying for it. It's a couple bucks a month. It's not bad for the benefits. I think it's worth it. But you get to kind of tailor what kind of meditation you want to do. So, for instance, if you want to be more productive, I'm doing that right now. I'm doing a packet of like 10 daily, 10-minute meditations that talks about how to be more increase your productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll do fitness or health, whatever you want. So it's really cool. And like I said, it's really – not that meditation is going to benefit everybody, but it really has helped me kind of start my day. I mean, that's the first thing I do in the morning. I get up, 4:30, 5 in the morning. You know, I work out. I try to work out every day. I don't reach that goal, but at least 3 or 4 times a week. But before I do that, I meditate. You know, I get up, do that really quick. Mm-hmm. And it's 10 minutes, dude. So, I mean, it really does, for me, it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the day. And it's helped me a lot. I mean, it really has.
For sure. And I parallel you there in pretty much everything you said. I'm sure it's the same for you, or maybe it was at the beginning. It is really hard for me to say, I'm going to sit here for 10 minutes and do nothing. That's terrible.
But you get into a habit. I mean, it's like habits, right. You know, successful people, what do? I mean, they develop habits and it's a habit. And trust me, Terrence, I mean, it's still – there's days where I'm like, I can't – I'm fidgety. I can't just sit there.
Yeah.
But when you – the more you do it, the better you get at it. And really, it has like – it's, and I look forward to it now where I'm like, oh, you know, I get up and do this. And it's
– no, for me, absolutely. it's a great thing. That's – I make that point because, for someone like me, it sounds like the worst thing you could imagine. It is torture. But you do it and you see – how productive you are that day,
mm-hmm.
and you realize how much time you saved.
Exactly.
It's way more than those 10 minutes just in that one day. So, I mean, I'm a huge believer in it. I'm not religious about it. I'm not weird about it. It's not like, I don't do transcendental meditation where mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't do any weird stuff like that, which I might try out, but, it's very powerful. For me, sometimes if it's going to be a busy day, I don't even get to it in the morning. But the second I have a chance to sit for a second, it might just be, five long counting breaths in and out just to still myself and focus my mind and
exactly.
clear out all the clutter and then go.
And this is the stuff that, because I used to teach in the academy. But this is the stuff, and there's people probably listening out there like, I think I'm crazy, but I wish that they would teach some of this stuff in the academies. In the academy, you don't have to spend like all amount of time on it, but a lot of time, but you have to be able to, you should be able to talk about, look, you need something to decompress. You need, whether it's a little bit of meditation a day, and that's the stuff that they don't. Our emotional wellness is the most important thing. I mean, there's all kinds of important things in the job, but you know, if we're not clear on the mind, we're not taking care of ourselves physically and mentally, nothing else matters, right?
Right.
So yeah. I think we need to do a better job. There's a, I don't know if you ever heard of emotional, Dr. Gilmartin. I don't know if you ever heard Kevin Gilmartin. So he wrote a book that basically talks about emotional well-being. And basically the premise behind his book was, you know, when we have to be hyper-vigilant, when we're out on the street. That's what keeps us alive, right? That's what keeps us safe. We have to watch the hands. We have to do all that stuff. But when we're off duty, we have to be able to turn that off. And it sounds like you did a good job doing that as a cop and maintaining your, you know, not having that bleed into your personal life all the time. The majority of cops can't do that. They're living and breathing, you know, because I was one of those guys where living and breathing law enforcement when I got off duty, you know. But he talks about, you know, just kind of when you're off, you're off. And you got to maintain that balance where, you know, there were many times as an officer where, you know, I would come home and I just didn't want to talk to my wife. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just kind of, and you probably had these days where I'm just going to kind of get into my shell and I'm going to go and kind of just veg out, watch TV, you know, and I'm just going to kind of not talk to anybody. Well, that is so damaging over the, you know, I mean, because you have to be able to come home and kind of separate it. And it's easier said than done. I get it. And it took me a long time, but we have to be able to get to that point where we have to have a balance in our life where, you know, our family is more important, you know, I mean, our emotional well-being. And he really, really talks about that. And it's a great book. And, yeah, Emotional Survival in Law Enforcement by Dr. Kevin Gilmartin. He was a cop for many years down in, I believe, Arizona, and he wrote this book. And it's really an amazing book. So it's all about balance, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, and I think, I mean, you made a point at the end there talking about priorities. And really what it falls to, I think, for a lot of people that I've seen, a lot of officers, is they lose sight of their priorities and they don't put their family first, or at least in their actions, they're not. And, you know, you said, it sounds like I did a good job with that balance. Well, I did, but I'll tell you, and anyone that's listening that is in law enforcement right now, and you might think, I'm doing great. Psychologically, I'm fine. I don't have at least too many demons in the closet right now. I'm doing okay. You know, I've got a great relationship with my wife, great friends, et cetera, great life. You are carrying a burden that you don't know is there. And I can speak to this because I did put the badge down and leave. And the day that I left, it felt like I had another 50% lung capacity, like something lifted off of my chest and I could breathe for the first time in 5 years.
Yeah, I could see that.
I had no idea it was there. No idea. But just the pressure, the burden of what every police officer is sworn to carry was gone. You know, I was just a civilian once again, and there is a huge burden there, whether you realize it or not. You know, it's something to think about. If you if you think that you have everything squared away, you're good to go, just be careful, because I think there's such a negative stigma when it comes to you know, going to a psychologist and just talking about stuff. I don't think everyone has to do it, but at the very least, you should have people in your life that you talk to about crappy stuff and what you're feeling and thinking, and you have to have an outlet for that.
Exactly. I mean, you can't keep that stuff. I mean, you know, Terrence, and I know, I mean, you can't keep that stuff bottled up, because eventually it's going to manifest into something, you know, whether it's drinking, you know, getting into fights with your significant other, not spending time with your kids. I mean, who knows? But it's going to translate into something else. And that's why I'm just such a big advocate. And you know, like, I love law enforcement, but I don't live and breathe it anymore like I used to. And I surround myself, with my, you know, a lot of my friends are still in law enforcement, but I have many friends like you do that are outside of law enforcement. You know, and I just want that balance in my life, you know. And what do they say? You're the average of the five people you associate with. So, I mean, it really is true to me. And Yeah, I'm in a different role, so people out there probably say, well, he's not on the street anymore. He's sitting behind a desk. Well, you know, I still did 20 years on the street and saw a lot of stuff that, like you said, you carry throughout your life. And but like I said, I mean, it's so much is about having, I think, those outlets and, you know, doing meditation or exercise or, you know, hanging out and talking and communicating and not carrying that stuff, you know, around with you all the time. And I agree with you. You don't necessarily have to go to a professional and talk about these things. It's just as long as you have an outlet for somebody, you know, that you can talk to. It's very important. What do you think, switching gears a little bit, what do you think some of the challenges, you know, are in law enforcement today beyond the obvious? I mean, we have, you know, stuff that are, you know, is happening with communities. We got to improve that. But what else do you think out there we need to be doing better?
Gosh, I think there's a lot, like you said, there, where do you start?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it depends on the department. The thing with American law enforcement, we just talked about this on a recent show, is that we have a very, very decentralized system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single department has its own culture, has its own policies, training systems, own budget. They're all different. So one department might have one issue, one might not have a problem there, but have some other very serious issues. I think broadly speaking, we need to, because in where we're at now with social media, especially, information is instant. Mm-hmm. And there really is only one side of the conversation right now, because, you know, as an individual police officer, you don't really have a voice in that conversation. Number one, police officers just generally try to lay low for various reasons. But number two, departments tend to be pretty restrictive on what officers can put out on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's I think that's detrimental to, you know, talking about police officers having someone to talk to and an outlet for what they're going through and thinking. That's another outlet.
Mm-hmm.
To have, when you go to work every day to save the world, to fix society's problems, and that's literally what you do. You know, you go and help people fix their problems, at least temporarily, and go on to the next person. When you do that every single day, you're sticking your neck out for people who might hate you. Many of them do. And then you've got the media and you know, these pundits and social justice warriors and mm-hmm. whoever it is saying terrible things about you and your profession. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, if someone attacks my character, my integrity, and they're wrong, I mean, hey, if you're right, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go fix it. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm always trying to be better. But if you say something about me that attacks my character and you're off, that is really hard for me. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree.
To swallow. Yeah. And so I think that's one thing that we're really behind on. And I didn't mean for it to go here, but I'll plug it anyways, because I created a program called Status Check, mm-hmm. which is basically a portal for police officers. They log in, and whether they're on their phone or computer, whatever it is, they have to have internet access. That's it. And they can record whatever they want. So, you know, if there's an issue going on with their community, something in mainstream media is going on, say a Ferguson-like incident happens, Terrence Crutcher, whoever it is,
mm-hmm.
you have an incident like that where the media is really butchering the details of this and not being fair to law enforcement, and you want to have a say in it. Status Check is a portal for only sworn officers to log in. They can say whatever they want to, or write. There's also a blog portion. Whatever it is that they submit basically gets edited for grammar, et cetera, and then is posted to the site, sent through social media, et cetera. But they can either pick an alias or just anonymous. So it basically removes that potential for backlash,
mm-hmm.
but gives them a chance to have a voice in the conversation.
Yeah,
and I think we have to do that better.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point. I mean, we Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot out there, and I love that. I love what you created with Status Check, and you have to tell when we get ready to wrap up, you need to tell people how to find that, people out there. But I think you're great. I think that's a great idea, and because when you were talking, I was just thinking about there isn't any outlet for officers, to. I mean, there is, here and there, but that's just a great point.
Right. And, I think we really need to keep to get back to your original question. I think we really just need to keep pushing community, that connection with your community. That is so hard to do, but it's proven itself. Community policing has proven itself to be effective. And
And it's not going anywhere.
it's not going anywhere, and we need to keep pushing that, or programs like that, philosophies like that. Because, I mean, it's hard enough to get people to trust you, to cooperate with investigations, and really, when it all boils down to it, I think at the academy, like you said, teaching meditation would be great. I think we just need to really drill home that, you are, I don't want to say servant, because that might be the right word, but you are there to serve your community.
Of
And
course, that's the
not,
right word.
like you said, not everyone's a bad guy. And I think we do the opposite in a most, probably majority of our academies and departments across the country. What we're not trying to, but the end result is that officers see everyone that, like you said, is not in uniform, doesn't have a badge, as, hey, I can't trust you. And that's tough. That makes it really hard for people to see police officers as human.
Well, and like I said, like you, I think all so much of life is about balance. So getting back to the academy, yes, you can, I think what Terrence and I are talking about, we're not talking about, okay, yeah, you still have to teach tactics and firearms and defensive
Right.
tactics and arrest
Absolutely.
control, all that stuff. That's all important. The only thing I think what we're trying to say is that you need to focus more. Because I know when I taught in the academy, like I said, we're teaching everything but emotional well-being. We're teaching everything but, yeah, we hit on community policing and the importance. But like you said, I don't think we're harping on it. We're not hitting it harder than we should. I mean, it's all focused on, tactics and shooting, which is important. Driving, I get it. It's all important. It's part of our job. But so much of what we're talking about, I mean, that's what we deal with the majority of time. I mean, the emotional part of what we do, and
Right.
it affects us every day. And as new officers, and you can attest to this, and I know I can, as a new officer, you're like, okay, all right, I saw that bad stuff, and okay, next day I saw that bad stuff, but it just catches up to you, and it's an accumulation of that stuff. And yeah, you do see some good stuff over the course of your career, and you can help people, but overwhelmingly, it's bad stuff. And I agree with you 100%. I think we need to be doing more for the next generation, to teach them, community policing, how to connect better, emotional well-being, all that stuff is so important.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen so many officers who, and I'll be honest, I probably was guilty of it a time or two. I tried not to treat people any differently than I would expect to an officer to treat a family member of mine. But you begin to recognize trends and types of people. You start to recognize, oh, that's a doper. That's this. You see someone from 100 yards away, you can tell they're on meth or whatever it
Oh,
is,
yeah.
and you begin to treat those people differently. And it's natural, it's human. I'm not saying that anyone is in the is a bad person. Like I said, I was probably guilty of it as well. But saw a lot of just this kind of arrogance, I am above you type mentality when it came to dealing with criminals. I'm not talking about just regular people, but actual criminals, repeat offenders, drug abusers, etc. Okay, I get it. I get where that comes from, but we've got to be better about checking that. And I don't know what the solution is because it's natural to human. It's natural. So I don't know if that is to come from above or what the deal is. But
I think some of it, I think some of it too, you know, is that it starts with the field training officers. And it, and I think when you get a, and this is just my opinion, when you get a, new officer in, you want to make sure that him or her are saddled with good field training officers.
No, you're 100% right.
Not the bad heavy officers that are, like you were saying, you know, we're better than you. You know, you have to have, you know, I'm not saying you have to, you know as well as I do, Terrence, you have to have that confidence. You have to have that kind of a little bit of an attitude. I get it. But you have to have that balance. I always come back to balance. I don't want my officers to be around, you know, the FTO who has that attitude. Like, I'm better than this guy over here. I want my officers to be around. And there are plenty of good officers out there like that, like this, where they have a good head on their shoulder and they're making good decisions and they're not perfect. They make mistakes, but they're not teaching this young impressionable officer to go out there and just judge people.
Right.
You know, I want an officer out there who's going to, you know, do what he or she has to do, you know, but not just immediately, like you said, make this snap decision. And a lot of that, in my opinion, because I've seen it, starts with the field training officers. You know,
a good point.
And it starts with the training, because I've seen it before. You probably have. I mean, you know, in my department, some of the departments I've worked in, I've seen FTOs that shouldn't be FTOs.
Right.
And they're training the next generation, and that sinks in. And then you have habits and attitudes that you spend time trying to unchange. And that's very difficult to do.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I had great FTOs with kind of the exception of one who he didn't have that issue at all. He was a old timer, but being that he had been there for a long, long, long time, he was very, very cynical, and he was a 100% pessimism all the time. So everything that came out of his mouth was negative. And I'm more of a realist, but I'm trying to look for the positive in things. I aspire to be an optimist, but I'm a realist. So when I'm in a car with someone that's negative all the time and nothing that they talk about is good, what am I supposed to talk about? I either have to fake it, or I just can't say anything because I don't agree with whatever that person's saying. So, I mean, I guess that's just an example of, we've got to be careful about who we've got training these new officers, as I was at that time.
And I guarantee you, he went home. He goes home, and he's negative at home too.
Oh yeah, no, that's just how he was. And you know, as I was there for and worked with him, you know, after FTO and stuff, got to know him a little bit better. He's a great guy.
Yeah,
I understood him more. But at the time, as you're trying to learn how to be a cop, and you're stuck in a car with this person you didn't, you know, pick to be with, that it's really important. It's just we can't overstate, I think, within the law enforcement community, how important training and especially those FTOs are, because they're just – they're the foundation. The academy and FTOs, that's the foundation of every officer.
Well, sir, now, Terrence, if people want to reach out to you, buddy, how do they do that? Give us some information, the listeners, how they can find you.
Yep. I mean, if you Google Police Academy Podcast, you'll find all my stuff. But the website is policeacademypodcast.com. And for officers who want to check out Status Check, there's a button, a link at the top of that page in the navigation for that. On Twitter, I am Police Academy PC, and Facebook is just the full name. There's a Facebook page. Same with YouTube. If you search YouTube, you'll find my YouTube channel, which is – I don't post podcasts on YouTube. It is its own thing. I use it for demonstrations. I use it to just more personally address people, the audience, and to, I don't want to say analyze, but I break down, I do analyze, I guess, for example, police shootings, to give people a perspective that they otherwise don't have access to. you know, explain what's going on here, why the officers are doing that, the training behind that, the thinking behind it, et cetera. So it's really geared for civilians who are listening to the media and watching this on the news and going, that's terrible, that's murder, and, well, most of the time it's not. It's actually a justified use of deadly force.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show, Terrence. You're awesome. The podcast is awesome. Keep doing what you're doing, buddy. I will have all Terrence's information linked up in the show notes. So I appreciate it so much, man. I know you're busy. You got stuff to do, but I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And I will talk with you soon, Terrence. Thank you so much, sir. Take care. Have a good night, man.
Yep, you too.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.